very few times in the history of television have shows risen to become more than just TV shows, but cultural phenomena. And that certainly happened in 1966 when the Batman television series made its debut. It was so popular that it aired twice a week for its first couple of seasons, and it was largely on the strength of the performances by, well, the dynamic duo of Adam West and our next guest, Burt Ward, who joins us this afternoon. Burt, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, citizen.
you are so used to this by now, I'm sure, but does it still make you scratch your head that people remain so fascinated with this tremendous show from over 50 years ago?
You know, no, I fully understand why. I mean, when Batman came out January 12, 1966, we were unlike any other television show in history. Number one, we had a completely broad appeal for the kids. It was the hero worship of, you know, superheroes and them riding in the Batmobile, climbing walls, fighting heinous villains. And for the adults, it was nostalgia of the comic book. And for the teenagers and college kids that were a really tough audience to reach at that point, it was the comic, the campy style, the subtle double meanings and all the suggestiveness we did. So that was a big appeal. But also, I think what was even a bigger appeal was the fact that the first time in television history, instead of the audience just kind of like a third party watching the action, that we really reached through the television set to affect people directly. We used to say that we put on our tights to put on the world. And because we went directly at the audience with all the kinds of things we did, you know, I think it was the very basis of what now you have with all these successful, you know, superhero movies, not just Batman, but Superman and Marvel movies, all these fantastic movies, where not only do they have superheroes, but if you look at the interaction between the actors right in the middle of the most dangerous things, like one could turn to another and just have some, you know, small comment. Well, you know, I don't like the fire, you know, whatever it might be. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah.
I think it doesn't surprise me, in other words.
Well, you guys were the template in so many ways, and I think the most successful of those franchises that have continued have also borrowed from you guys the humor that was such a big part of it.
Right. That humor. So right, in the, you know, like I remember one of my lines, where we came in on the against the villain, and there was all these henchmen here, and I looked at Batman. I said, "Batman, there's eight of them against two of us. Odds in our favor."
Well, the show can still be seen everywhere. I love catching it on cable, and one of the things that is remarkable. Obviously, it holds up, but it looks so good. That visual style was so unique, and those shows look fantastic today.
Well, and in color, you know, I mean,
right.
This was right when color first came out, and Batman was probably the most colorful show you could possibly imagine. You look at our outfits, Batman and Robin, and look even at the villains' outfits, and the look at the villains' hideout with, you know, where secret hideout, all these markings, you know, secret entrance, all of these things, you know. It was just this wild, campy style. But look at the pows and the zaps with the fight scenes, the Batman theme music. I mean, people just went nuts. They loved it.
Well, and you got an amazing group of guest stars. And once the show became such a huge success, seemingly everybody in Hollywood wanted to be a part of it.
Absolutely. And the problem was there wasn't enough different villain roles to accommodate so many people. That's why the producers set up that segment of each of our shows where Batman and Robin are climbing up the wall, and then a window opens with some very famous celebrity like Sammy Davis Jr., Jerry Lewis, Don Ho, Betty White, Colonel Klink, Lurch. I mean, it goes on and on and on of all these people. And, it, you know, everybody just loved it. And for the actors, oh, my gosh, the pressure from their children to get on our show was immense.
We're talking with Burt Ward here on Downtown. Now, what people may not know is that it was also a pretty dangerous show, and you often bore the brunt of that, having to do a number of stunts yourself, and you spent more than a few days in the emergency room early on. Is that right?
Well, actually, for the first 6 days of filming, I visited the emergency ward of the hospital unexpectedly. Had never even been to an emergency ward. You know, and it was because Well, I'll give you an example. Day one, right in the very beginning, very first shot, day one, Bronson Canyon, the famous scene coming out of the Batmobile, where I got dressed, got the makeup on. They said, okay, Bert, go into the cave, get in the Batmobile, and we're going to shoot this scene. So I get in the Batmobile, I look over, and at first I thought it was Adam dressed as Batman. But as my eyes began to focus in the dim light, I could see that it wasn't Adam. And I said, well, who are you? And the guy said, I'm Hubie. I said, oh, well, why are you here? He says, because this is a very dangerous shot, and the studio doesn't want to take a chance of Adam West getting hurt. I said, oh, well, that's good. And then I started to think for a minute. I said, well, wait a minute. Do I have a stuntman? He said, oh, yeah, you have one. I said, oh, well, that's good, too. Well, where is he? Oh, he's over having coffee with Adam last time I saw him. Well, wait a minute. If this is that really dangerous, why isn't he doing it? So I don't know. So now I can hear him, roll it up, getting ready to start. I said, wait, whoa, 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 there's a terrible mistake here. And the second assistant director comes over and says, Bert, what is it? What is it? You know? And I said, I mean, this man tells me this is a dangerous stunt. He says, yeah, yeah, it is. And he says that I have a stunt man who's having coffee with Adam. Yeah, what's that got to do with you? Well, why isn't he sitting here for this dangerous shot instead of me? Oh, we can't use him. I said, you can't use him? Why? Well, he doesn't look like you. Oh, my God. You hire a stunt man to be my stunt man. He doesn't look like me. Why is that? Well, couldn't find anybody. So you got to do it yourself, Bert. So sure enough, we come out of the back cave, 55 miles an hour coming out of this cave, directly at the camera, make this swerving sharp left turn, which is exactly, the stuntman did it perfectly, but unexpectedly, my door flew open. And the centrifugal force was throwing me out the door. And just by pure luck, I reached my hand behind me and caught my little finger on the gear shift knob that kept me from falling out, but pulled my finger right out of the joint. And that's incredibly painful. My door knocked the cameraman off the camera truck and knocked a big arc lamp over, which if that had fallen, somebody could have killed him. So what they stopped everything, people ran over, and they saw me, you know, Bert, you okay? I said, yeah, but my hand is hurting. And even through the glove, my finger had already doubled in size. They said, oh, my gosh, it looks like your finger's out of joint. We got to get you to a hospital. I said, okay. And I got out of the car. Well, where's the car? Oh, well, we can't go now. What do you mean? Oh, we didn't get the shot. Oh, when can I go? Well, as soon as we get the shot. That was at 7:30 in the morning. I left for the emergency hospital at noon.
Man.
And that was killing me all that time. That was day one. Day two, second degree burns from explosions. Day three, a 2x4 lands on my nose, breaks my nose, broken nose. I'm telling you, I didn't think I was going to survive the first week.
That's incredible. We're talking with Bert
Ward. I got to tell you the studio.
Oh, yeah, please.
They were very smart. They took out a giant insurance policy on me. And I could swear by the end of the third season, they were trying to collect on that policy.
Wow. The chemistry you had with Adam West was so tremendous, and that was a big part of the success of the show, and that was a real thing. You remained friends all the way up until Adam's death.
Yes, we were very close friends. Adam and I, well, we met, believe it or not, we screen tested together, and we met on the set of the screen test 10 minutes before the screen test, and I'll tell you something, within 5 minutes, the two of us talking together were laughing. And we never stopped laughing for over 50 years. I mean, he just had the greatest personality, the funniest person. He just was just so incredibly a nice guy. And on Batman, we played up that chemistry. You know, I really believe with all the great comic duos in history, your Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, you know, Johnny Carson, you know, I mean, all these people, they had a foil. They had someone who was just opposite, you know. I mean, Ed McMahon was just the opposite of Johnny Carson. Mm. And you know, some were tall, some were small, some were short, some were heavy, you know, whatever. There was always contrast, and I think that's what makes for great humor, contrast.
Well, we could talk Batman all day, but I want to talk about what you and your wife have been doing for many, many years now, because it's some incredible work. And as a dog owner and a dog lover, I want to hear more, first of all, about the more than 15,000 dogs that you've fostered together through the years?
Yeah, well, my wife and I, we operate the largest giant-free dog rescue in the world. It's called Gentle Giant. And in 25 years of rescuing dogs, we've saved more than 15,500, every one from being put to death on their last day in an animal shelter or given up to us by an owner. And in the course of saving these dogs, all of which, by the way, they haven't lived in some other building or some other property. Every one of the 15,500 has lived in our house with us in the last 25 years. At all times, I have a minimum of 50 in my house, okay? All sizes. We have 45 different breeds. We started with the giant breeds, but now, I mean, we have all size breeds. But in the course of doing this, rescuing these animals, saving them from death, we discovered a way to help dogs live longer. And not just a little bit longer, we have doubled and tripled the lifespan of dogs, okay, up to 27 years, and including giant breed dogs that only live 6 to 8 years, now living into their 20s. And the way we do it, okay, is by creating a special feeding and care program. And we feed dogs differently, we care for dogs differently, and we came up with a dog food that is different than every other dog food in the world. It is so dramatically different. And dogs on our food, most people tell us after a month of feeding their dog Gentle Giants, which is the name of our rescue and the name of our dog food, they think they have a different dog after a month. I mean, the dog is so much healthier. Older dogs are playing like puppies again. And what we've done, because this is our charity and we take no money from this, no salary, is that we went to Walmart and we said, we want to give you the only dog food in the world that dogs can live up to 27 years. We're going to take nothing from it, but we do ask you that you bring it to the public as inexpensively as possible. And they've done that. Our Gentle Giant dog food retails in Walmart and other grocery stores across the country at less than half the price of what you would pay for a food in a pet store that won't keep your dog living up to 27 years. So our motto became half the price and twice the life. It's our charity. And every day we get hundreds of calls from people all across America. Oh, I just heard about this, and where can I get it? And how do I feed my dog differently? And all these different things, and it all works marvelously.
And I thought one of the most fascinating things in reading about it, and we'll talk about what goes into the food itself because that's important, but it's that way of feeding your dogs differently. First of all, getting their food up off the floor, so especially the larger breeds aren't constantly leaning forward, but also feeding them more frequently but a little less each time rather than those who feed a dog everything they eat for the entire day in one big meal.
Exactly. Well, let me give you the science behind it. In terms of raising the food, okay, there's two, it's food and water raised, and there is a specific height for every single dog. And that height is such that when the dog comes over to eat or drink, they never lean down. They only tilt their head down to eat or drink. They don't lean up, they don't lean down. Why is this? Why? Because two major reasons. One, there's a deadly condition in the United States that kills 10% of all the dogs. Okay, it's called bloat and torsion. Not just in the United States, actually it's worldwide. But it's, if the dog leans down and gets air into their stomach, they can bloat, okay? And or if they ingest, they lean down and they ingest food into their lungs, they can aspirate, both of which can kill the dog. So we elevate the food for that reason. But there's something else. Here's what it is. Here's how we have dogs living so long. Most dogs, by the time they're 8 or 9 years old, start to have a problem getting up. They start to have a problem walking. Okay, and what happens, as I call it in the real world, within a couple of the years, the dog can't get up anymore, and you're having to try to help it outside. And if that dog weighs 50 pounds or more, most people give up. The dog is going to the bathroom on itself. They take the dog in to the vet and have it euthanized, even though the dog is perfectly alert. So what is happening? The dog's body is prematurely wearing out. By the techniques we show people how to do, the dog's body doesn't prematurely wear out. That dog's body is still active in their 20s. And how the food ties in, real quickly, I'll tell you just two gigantic things that difference from our food and everybody else. All the other dog foods, to my knowledge, inject massive amounts of fat into dogs. Mm. Why? Because it makes dogs hungrier, to make you feed them more, to make you buy more dog food. I find that unconscionable. But there's something even worse. And that is, if you've ever felt dog food, and if you have got a dog, I'm sure if you felt that food, you feel that slightly greasy feeling on the outside. Why is that there? It's there because dogs love the smell and taste of meat, but they don't like the smell and taste of fat. So in order to get dogs to eat their fat-saturated food, some manufacturers are spraying this chicken fat on the outside that dogs will eat to cover up the smell of the fat on the inside, a double whammy of fat. But worst of all, you would never take bacon grease or animal fat and pour it down your garbage disposal, right? Because you know it would clog it. And once it hardened, you'd be buying a new garbage disposal. So my point is this. When you realize that animal fat will ruin a metal garbage disposal, what do you think that animal fat is doing to the intestines and arteries of the dogs you love? Wow, big difference. We don't have the fat on the inside, added fat, and we don't have the grease on the outside. And that alone can add 5 or 10 years to your dog's life. Just that alone. But we do a bunch of other stuff. And this is our charity.
You can get more information, by the way, by going to the website, gentlegiantsdogfood.com. As Bert mentioned, the food is available at Walmart, but also a couple of the online retailers, Chewy.com.
Walmart.com, PetSmart.com, gentlegiantsdogfood.com, which is our website, all available. And the great thing is, people can call and get help. Where, tell me, Rich, where in today's world can you get free help? I don't know any place except calling us.
Well, and it's more than just the food. As you point out on the website, it's really a program, and all that information is available. And you know, we love nothing more than our pets, and you want to keep them around. And it's not just keeping them around as long as you can, but it's that quality of life. And I've got to think that's just as valuable.
Exactly. And think of it this way. My wife, Tracy, and I spent the last 25 years of our life learning and putting on our website, which your listeners can learn in less than 25 minutes. That took us 25 years. Wow. You talk about efficiency. Every one of your listeners who's got a dog can add 5 to 10 years to their dog's life if they just follow what took us all these years to learn.
Well, it's great information. Check it out on the website, gentlegiantsdogfood.com. Bert, I kicked myself. You know, I was in that target audience. I was 8 years old when Batman made its debut in 1966. Somewhere,
right.
Somewhere I lost that lunchbox. I would kill for that right now.
you know, it's so funny because when I would go out and make appearances, people would come up and they would pull out, for example, one of these trading cards, you know, these little trading cards where they had bats. Let me tell you something. That every square millimeter of that trading card was wrinkled. I mean, that trading card, and they would pull this thing out. It was barely held together to ask me to sign it. Or that launch box that you're referring to that had a million dents in it, that was their treasured lunchbox. Oh, I mean, people save these things. And, you know, Adam and I would autograph them. We autograph photos. We answer questions. People love to have their photo taken with us. And, you know, it was as big a thing for the parents as it is for the kids. I mean, the kids of yesterday are the parents of today. And they get just as big a kick out of meeting Adam and I as we, you know, when they were kids.
Now, before we let you go, I do want to ask, because there have been people who had successes early in their career and got identified strongly with a role and ran from that and tried to avoid talking about it. But you and Adam as well embraced that through the years. Why did you take that approach to it?
Well, let me tell you. Think of it this way. If you have a glass that is full, right? It's full. It could be full with 100 different things in it, or you could be full with one major project that has a few other smaller ones with it, and it's still full. And our lives have been full, and with all the pleasure of that we have brought, and that's a great kick for me, to the happiness for so many kids. I had one FBI agent that I met last year. I was the Grand Marshal at the Huntington Beach 4th of July parade, actually one of the biggest in the nation. And in fact, it's so big that when they have over 100,000 people, the Homeland Security gets involved. There were FBI agents there and all of this. And one of them came up to me, introduced himself, and said, you know, as a kid, I might have gone in the wrong direction, but I watched Batman, and I decided to get in law enforcement, and I'm happily married with 3 kids, and I got a wonderful life. And I owe it all to what I learned watching Batman. I said, well, I'm sure you learned a lot of other stuff, but it was still a great compliment that we were able to do something good for people. And just like doing good for people and rescuing people in Gotham City, I never stopped rescuing. Now I'm rescuing dogs. I like to say that I was the Cape Crusader, and now I am the Canine Crusader.
Before we let you go, I just had to ask about the experience that you had with going back 50 years later and working on the animated film together back in 2016. The chance to go back and really revisit those characters.
Yes, well, look, for me, I never left it. And I'll tell you, there were two feature films, you know, Batman, Return of the Caped Crusaders, and the second one, Batman versus Two-Face, okay? And that one had William Shatner in it. I mean, can you imagine here the two most iconic TV shows in history, Batman and Star Trek, with the actors working together? But for me, it, you know, people say, well, was it hard to get back in character? I said, no, you have to understand, when I was selected to do it, the executive producer, William Dozier, came to me and said, Burke, we interviewed 1,100 young actors, and there's a reason we picked you. I said, well, what's that? He says, because in our mind, forgetting television, if there really, for real, was a Robin, we think that you personally would be it. So we don't want you to take on some other character. What you are is what we want. So we only want you to be yourself and be enthusiastic, which is what I did for 120 episodes. So being myself, whether it's a year ago, 50 years ago, or 100 years ago, is not going to change. It's the same. So it's instantly easy for me to take on the character.
Well, you and Adam brought joy to a lot of people for many, many years. And now you're continuing to keep joy around by keeping our dogs healthier and happier and live a longer life. So, Bert, thank you so much for all you and Tracy do. And thank you so much for visiting with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Citizen Catmobile.
That is Burt Ward here on Downtown Again. You can visit the website for more information, gentlegiantsdogfood.com.